morning, we're going to work on who is most into Christmas. And I saw a list the other day of the top 10 Christmas traditions. So I want to ask all of you to stand, remain standing if you do these things, okay? First Christmas tradition, have you remain standing if you've sung a Christmas song? Good, you just did it. Thank goodness nobody sat down. We just sang that one, okay? Remain standing if you've decorated a Christmas tree this year. If you remain standing, if you did it before Thanksgiving, the real spiritual people, all right? I think East Chase did it on Halloween, all right? If you're going to bake some Christmas cookies in your family, remain standing. If you're going to go riding around and look at Christmas lights, remain standing. If anybody in your family has or will ever write a letter to Santa, remain standing. If you turned in your Serve Together form, remain standing. That's a new Christmas tradition, all right? If you're going to watch a Christmas movie, remain standing. If you're going to build a gingerbread house, boy, we're getting down to the spiritual people, remain standing. Boy, we're getting there really good. If you are going to wear an ugly or have wear an ugly Christmas sweater, remain standing. Okay, wow, okay. If you exchange gifts, if you spend time with loved ones, I think we've got four people standing. Give them a hand. Now we know who really celebrates. So this morning, here's what we're going to try to dive into. Is Christmas meaningful to you? And I think you'll probably find out the 10 things we just mentioned are probably not the answer. But is Christmas really meaningful? And let me make a jump for you that might sound like quite a jump pretty quickly. Is life meaningful to you? And you say, well, what's the connection? I'm going to tell you this morning, if you really understand the meaning of Christmas, it will change the meaning of your life. Now, you guys know we're in John chapter 1. You have your Bible or phone. Open to John chapter 1. I'm just going to read you the first couple verses that are just packed with meaning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. I mean, what would we say here, right here at the beginning, is this Word, this Logos, this communication of God was with us, and He's eternal. He's not someone who was created, but He becomes a part of the creation. And the word is absolutely so significant here. And John's the only gospel that does this, who describes Jesus as a word. The Greek word is the word logos, reason. You see, the Greek people had been searching for centuries for the real meaning behind life. What does life really mean? What's it about? Why do we exist? Is there any meaning at all? And they'd been searching. Now, listen, guys, by the time Jesus shows on the scene, the Greek people had basically given up. They just didn't see any real meaning to life. So there were two major philosophies of life as Jesus hits the earth. Number one was the Stoics. And the Stoics had decided that life has no meaning, so just you know, don't let yourself get too high. Don't let yourself get too low. Be a Stoic. Just don't let yourself feel, or life is going to hurt you. And so a Stoic would say, philosophy-wise, is okay to make life as good as you can. Just suck it up and make it. Just try to be a good person. On the other hand, the other major philosophy was the Epicureans. And their philosophy was quite different. Because life had no meaning, just go ahead and party. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. And so we have two contrasting philosophies. The Stoics who say, just don't feel, because it doesn't matter. The Epicureans who say, feel as much as you can, because it doesn't matter. And John says, time out. You're not getting it. You're not understanding. There's more to life than just this life. You're looking in the wrong places. And I think today as we look at our culture, isn't it crazy that almost those same two philosophies or around. You know, on one part, we know life's tough. It's just, okay, let me just gut it out. On the other hand, I know life's tough. Let me just, inebriate myself or take enough drugs to not be around it. And John's going to say, no, there's something so much more meaningful. And it's found in that logos. And what he's going to say is, the logos, the word, is not an abstract philosophy. It is a person to be known. So we're going to go to the best part of our series this morning. John chapter 1, verse 14. We're actually going to use one of those ... ellipses today because we talked about the part about John the Baptist last week. So I want you just, man, these verses are so packed. If you don't recognize it, you're not awake this morning, okay? Let's go to verse 14. We're going to finally find out the name of the Word, okay? The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Out of his fullness we've all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in the closest relationship with the Father. He has made him known. Now we're going to do two things this morning. First of all, we're going to look at the theological meaning of the incarnation. Second, we're going to look at the practical meaning of the incarnation. Because if you understand the theology, it's going to change the way you live. Now, to understand the theological meaning, I just want to look at some of these phrases. They're all packed. So let's just look at one after the other for a couple minutes. First of all, that first phrase, the Word became flesh. You could make a really strong argument that is the most important verse in the important sentence in the whole Bible. The Word, that's Jesus, we found out, became flesh. Now, that word flesh was very offensive to Greek people. It was just an ugly word. It's the same word Paul uses in his writing. Sarx is the Greek word. You know, we think about the flesh, we think about the sinful nature. And yet he says here that Jesus became flesh. What's he trying to say? Jesus became a human being. He actually came into a body. The agent of creation has now become a part of the creation. God invaded this troubled and fallen earth, and he knocked a hole between the concrete wall between the perfection of heaven and the absolute imperfection of life on this earth, and he entered into it. God became a man. And the cool thing about what these words mean is God became a man without losing any of his divinity. He's still God, he's fully God, and he's fully man. Now, you know, we say that like it means nothing, but in the early church, that was the most challenging doctrine of all. A lot of people said, no way, buddy, no way that God could be in flesh. The Greek people believed that flesh was evil. And so they couldn't. So there began to be a doctrine in the first century that Jesus just seemed to be in the flesh. He really wasn't. And you know, John later has to write another book to correct this. Look with me in 1 John chapter 4 and listen to what he says in verse 2. He's pretty stiff about this. This is how we recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. But every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. It was a big deal, guys. And it's a big deal to us if we really believe that God became one of us. Now, second incredible phrase here is he made his dwelling among us. The literal word there is he pitched his tent among us. It's the same word used in the Old Testament for his tabernacle. What was the tabernacle? The tabernacle was the place in the middle of the children of God where God lived. And you couldn't really go into it without a blood sacrifice because you were so unholy. And only the priest, the high priest, could actually go into it, and he could only go once a year scared to death. And so this is radical theology that now God has come and he has pitched his tent among us. I like how the Message translation puts this so much. He has moved into our neighborhood. How about if you were talking to one of your neighbors down the street and they said, and you said, hey, I saw somebody new moved into our neighborhood. Have you met him yet? And they said, oh, yeah. And you go, well, who is it? And they go, you'll never believe this, but it's God. Well, what have they done with their house? It's perfect now. I mean, God's living down the street. That's what he's saying. He has come to dwell with us. And then I love this phrase, we have seen his glory. Now, the idea of flesh would have been stunning to Greek people. The idea of seeing the glory of God would have been stunning to Jewish people. Because remember, in the Old Testament, you couldn't see God's glory and not die. You say, well, Moses did. Well, just think about it. God said, okay, Moses, he's going to say, I want to see your glory. And God says, you know, you really can't handle that. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hide you in a cave in the middle of a mountain, and I'm going to pass in front of you. And you know, Moses, I tell you, you can see my back. All you can handle, Moses, is the afterglow. Why? Because what is the glory of God? The glory of God is the character of God. The glory of God, it literally means weightiness. And why could no one see God? Because his character was so perfect. He was so high voltage that he would blow all your circuits if you saw him. And that's what's so radical about this. We've seen him. Listen to me. John never got over that. I mean, listen to 1 John again, where he writes about this. It's almost, you know, parallel to what we've just been reading in 1 John chapter 1, verse 1. This which was from the beginning, which we've heard, listen, which we've seen with our eyes, which we've looked at, and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared. We've seen it. We testify it. Listen, my friends, John could never get over that he had actually seen God. He's like, guys, you know, because he's dealing with these folks who are not so sure he was in the flesh. Hey, guys, not only did I see him, I held him. I touched him. He was real. Then the next phrase, out of his fullness, we've received grace upon grace. That's sort of an unusual phrase. There are a lot of different translations. We've received blessing upon blessing, grace upon grace. What's it saying? Out of God's fullness. Here we talk about wonderful this month. Out of the fullness of God. God is so full. What have we received? We've received grace on top of grace on top of grace. What's he trying to say here? Is there is an unending flow of God's kindness. It never ends. One translation says, you'll find wonder upon wonder, and every one of them is true. Because here's what you've got to believe. If Christmas is going to be meaningful, the incarnation is going to be meaningful, you've got to believe that this is true. And that, yes, God had given grace before, and God's still giving grace, and it's just unending the amount of grace. And then another incredible line, the law was given by Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus. Now, is he slamming Moses? I don't think so. Because there is grace in the Old Testament, if you read closely. There are times where people are forgiven. There are times where God doesn't strike people dead. But the law couldn't completely save us. He said, yes, the law came through Moses, because basically the old covenant, the old law, was a law. It was a law system. Do it and you're okay. But now Jesus has come. He's not rejecting law. He's fulfilling the law. And now Jesus has brought grace, this unmerited favor, this blessing upon blessing. You see, because the law couldn't fully save us. The law didn't make us feel better. It actually made us feel worse. It didn't help us to be good. It just revealed how bad we really were. The law didn't give joy and peace because nobody could keep it. It brought guilt. And as Paul said, it's just the tutor to lead us to Jesus, where Jesus is able to be full of truth. He's not rejecting the truth. In fact, he is the truth. You want to see the truth about life? Look at Jesus. He is full of truth and he's full of grace. Grace and truth came through Jesus. And then final phrase here theologically that's so deep is he, Jesus, made him known. What is God like? Look at Jesus. Some translations say he explained him. So guys, that's amazing that we can actually know God. We can know what he's like. God said, I don't want to be so high. I want to be so far above you that you can't grasp what I'm like, that you just grope in the darkness thinking maybe I understand it, maybe I don't. Man, I'm coming. I'm going to show you the full voltage of my glory. I'm going to show you who I am. He made him known. A.W. Tozer, the famous theologian, put it this way. Your view of God, listen closely. Your view of God is the most important thing about you. You know, why would he say that? Because your view of God will determine your response to God. If you grew up like many of us thinking God's like the state trooper, you know, in the speed zone in the trap city in South Alabama on the way to the beach, and you know he's around the corner with his radar gun, and man, he's just ready to get you. If that's your view of God, you're gonna withdraw from God. On the other hand, if your view of God is he's just sort of this cosmic Santa Claus, in the heavens who's sort of making a list and checking it twice, but really not. We know he really doesn't do that. I was up really early with my 4-year-old granddaughter, Caroline, and somehow that came up this morning, and she's like, grandbuddy, Santa Claus comes to good little girls. And I said, well, how do you know if you're good? She said, if you go to sleep when mommy tells you to. Which was sort of funny because she's the one kid who wouldn't go to sleep last night. And then she says, I do a lot of nice things for mommy. I try to help her. Why do you do that, Caroline? Because I want some gifts. I mean, if you look at God as just simply this state trooper who's trying to catch you, or this Santa Claus who's really not taken seriously, you're not going to take him seriously. But if you see what Jesus says, if you see this incredible description of who God is, it'll change everything about you. So let's move from the theology to the practical, okay? What's theology? Let's just talk for a second. Theology is the study of God. Now, there are some people today who mistakenly say theology and doctrine doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Don't pay attention to those kind of things. That's just old stuff. Listen to me. Guys, theology matters a lot. Your doctrine matters a lot because what you believe will absolutely determine how you live. And most importantly, what you believe about God will determine your reaction to God. And that's why we want to focus on Jesus. So if you believe the incredible theology we've gone through really quickly, what are some practical implications in your life? Number one, God is knowable. Jesus didn't come just to talk about God. He came to show us God. He's approachable. He wants to be known. John 17, verse 3, Jesus said this. Listen closely. This is eternal life that you know God, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, who he sent. It's all summed up in knowing. Here's the great news, guys. This incredible Jesus that we're looking at. He wants you to know him. Now, historically, biblically, that's a really pretty fascinating word. Listen to a line in the Old Testament. Adam knew Eve. What does that mean? Don't everybody look down at one time, okay? Okay. It means they had the most intimate, close relationship possible. Same word. He's saying God is approachable. He's knowable. And here's the great thing is you're going to want to know him. You ever met somebody and you were just really impressed with him? Man, that is the coolest person, man. They just got this charisma and personality, you know. And you thought, man, I'm going to make it my goal to get to know them. And you got to know them. And the more you got to know them, you went, what I saw wasn't quite what I was asking for. I mean, they're not. The more you knew them, the more you wanted to withdraw from them. Here's my promise to you today. The more you know Jesus, the more you're going to want to be close to him. The better you know him, the more you'll like him. And absolutely, the more you'll love him. And the Christmas story, the incarnation story says, God came after you. He wanted a relationship with you so bad, he became a man. Now, not only, number one, God is knowable, but the other implication here is that God is empathetic. God can feel what you feel because he's been where you've been. Point one would say God is understandable, at least to a point. Point two would say he's not only understandable, he's understanding. He actually can relate to where you are. Now listen to a couple of passages that really emphasize this in the book of Hebrews, where he's talking about the superiority of Jesus Christ. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 18. Listen to this, talking about Jesus. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he's able to help those who are being tempted. Guys, because he has suffered, because he's actually been tempted, he can help you. And then look, he gets a little more detailed over in chapter 4, verse 15, talking about Jesus as our high priest. We do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who's been tempted in every way. Every way, every way. Did you hear that? Every way. Just as we are. Here's the difference. Yet he did not sin. Well, then what does that change? Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Because when you're messed up, he can help you. And when you go to him, he's not going to shake his head and say, I don't understand. Maybe you ever remember, you know, just having a, you know, something you're struggling with, a problem, and you finally decided, you know, I need some help, and I need to find someone to talk to, and maybe you found a friend, and you just sort of said, hey, I got to tell you what's going on. I'm really struggling with this. And they said, I'm so sorry. Buddy, I'll be praying for you. Thank you for sharing that. And that person, I mean, they're nice and you appreciate them being polite about it, but they don't get it. And they don't really help you. It's the friend you go to and say, man, I've really got this struggle and problem and I'm not doing real well right now. And you tell them what it is and they go, you too? You struggle with that? I struggle with that. Listen, my friend, that's the person who helped you. Here's the promise of the incarnation. Because Jesus has been where you are, he can help you. So this morning, if you feel misunderstood, guess what? He can help you. If you're lonely, if you feel rejected, if you've had someone betray you, if you're facing death, if you feel like God's not answering your prayer, if you feel like God's abandoned you, Jesus gets it. Third practical application. Number three, life has purpose. Yeah, the Stoics couldn't find it. The Epicureans couldn't find it. John says, I've got it, guys. I've got it. I've touched it. I've seen it. What are we here for? Guys, here it's so simple. We're here to love Jesus. We're here for that relationship. We're here to know him. We're here not only to love him, but we're here to love like him. I mean, you really boiled it all down, and Scripture says it over and over. The purpose of your life and my life is to love God and that love to show up in the way that we love other people. Life's never going to work if the biggest purpose you have is to party and have a good time, because you're going to, one day it's going to lose it. And you're going to have to drink more and more for it to be mean. You're going to have to shoot up more and more. It's all going to lose it. And one day you're just going to die, and who cares? If you're just stoic and just trying to make it through life and grind through this whole thing, man, that's not life. But if you find your life in Him, I love when the Apostle Paul says, Christ is my life. And then it begins to show up that you're willing to do what He did. He moved from heaven to your neighborhood. He came down to take care of you. I can barely remember this, but it shook up America. I think I was 5 years old when it happened. But in 1964, in Queensboro of New York City, there's a woman who was beaten and murdered right in the middle of all these apartment complexes and all these people on the street. And what shook America up was nobody helped her. Nobody even called the police. And so everybody's like, oh my goodness, what kind of culture can we live in where people can watch someone murdered and not even care? So they decided to go back to all those apartment complexes and try to find the people who might have been on the street at that time to find out, why did no one help this woman? And the truth was, nobody wanted to be honest about it. Finally, anonymously, one man said, if I'm being honest, I just didn't want to get involved. And that sounds pretty bad, but think about it. If you get involved, the police may question you. If you get involved and it's the wrong group, they might retaliate against you. Let's be honest, it's easier not to get involved. But here's the story of our God. He got completely involved. He got into our mess. He was vulnerable. He got hurt. And my friends, if your life's going to have meaning, then you just can't sit there and watch life go to hell around you. We are in the likeness of Jesus, and we get involved. And one more point here practically. This story says that anything is possible. Guys, the miracle of the incarnation is the basis of every other miracle in the life of Jesus. Because the incarnation says, if God can actually become a baby in the womb of a teenage girl and enter this world, then what could God not do? Anything's possible. Listen, my friends, if you're not finding meaning in Christmas, you're not getting it. Because if Christmas is true, the greatest dream you have could be true. If God could literally become flesh, and as John says, there's just wonder on top of wonder on top of wonder on top of wonder. Listen, He's still overflowing. If your life is meaningless today, it's possible for it to be meaningful. If you're lonely, He's going to come in and meet you. If you're hurting and feeling rejected, He understands enough to help you. His power is inexhaustible. So what are we saying here today? Life is meaningful if you understand the incarnation. That's why, guys, I'm so glad as a church we talk about it. Because most of us, if we could, we try to skip this. Because we're into those top 10 things. We're into trees and lights and gifts and gingerbread houses and cookies. Those are all cool. Nothing wrong with that. Traditions are great. But that's not what's going to get you up in the morning the rest of your life. That's not what's going to motivate you. It's going to be when you theologically understand the incarnation and it practically affects your life. Too many of us today, if we'd be honest, we're either living like the Stoics and we're just trying to make it through the drudgery of life, or we're like the Epicureans, we're just trying to find something that'll give me a temporary high so I don't have to pay attention to life. And what John says is, oh, please, guys, hold on. the Word became flesh. God came to rescue you as one of you. I like the story of a little girl. Her dad was off on a business trip, and she was just like 4 years old. And she was upset because dad was gone. She kept coming to dad, coming to mom, saying, hey, when's dad going to get back? What's going to be a few days? When dad? And she just was sort of unconsolable about her daddy being gone. And so finally one night, the mother said, I'm going to help her get to sleep better. So she brought a picture, a family picture with the dad in. I said, hey, there's dad. And I love what the little girl's dad said. She said, Mom, I sure wish dad could just step out of that picture. And guys, here's the good news of the incarnation. Our God stepped out of the picture and into the world. And if you'll let it, that'll change everything about your life. So this morning, if you're struggling with meaning, if maybe you're more like the Stoics, you know, there's a lot of us just trying to make it. We're at church, we're just trying to make it. We're just trying to feel good, and so we just do one sort of fun thing after the other, and it just never quite feels right. And this morning, if you want to find real meaning, and if you understand this story, I'm telling you, you can know God. God can feel with you whatever you're going through. Your life can have a purpose, guys. That's why Christmas is so important. And God's grace is unstoppable. So today we need to pray for you. If you're ready to follow this Jesus, if your mind is blown by this story, which it should be, and you're not following Jesus, make that decision right now while we all stand and sing.